The show's Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more, and we'll be talking about music affiliated with some theater. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival is going on at Ewing Manor in Normal, Illinois, and we have with us a representative of the festival to talk about this year's shows. And then Glenn Wilson, who's a baritone sax player, is, I referred to him as a tenor sax player earlier, is Barry sax player, and he's the person who coordinates their pre-show music at the festival, and he's brought along with him guitarist George Turner, who's been on the show a number of times, as has Glenn, and we'll do some live playing in our studio. It's all today on Live and Local. Stay with us. And that was music featuring baritone sax player Glenn Wilson from his disc called Blue Porpoise Avenue?
That's right.
Did I sort that out right?
Yep. It's a play on Green Dolphin Street.
And what's Green Dolphin Street?
That's a jazz song
that
we like to play.
If I were a jazzer, I would know, but yeah. I'm just exposed to jazz partly through the show.
Good.
Yeah, I'm looking at your disc cover. You have to sort of turn it in different ways to figure out that title, but in any event, Glenn Wilson is with us on the show today, and along with guitarist George Turner and the managing director of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, Dick Fulce. And we're going to talk about the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, which is well underway at Ewing Manor. Ewing Manor is actually located in Normal or in Bloomington?
It's in Bloomington.
In Bloomington. I always get that mixed
up. It's close. You know, the towns are very close together.
Yes, I know. Just like over just here like in Champaign-Urbana.
Exactly.
Once stick one foot on one side of the street and you're in one town, and is that same in Bloomington Normal, right?
It is.
But we don't have different parking meters for every town like they do here.
You mean with different rates and all of that stuff?
Yeah.
We can't agree. I think they should all just abolish the parking meters, and then we'd all be in great shape. But then the cities might not be. In any event, you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. That tune was called Cat's Cradle, Rory Stewart tune. And apologies for the delay in coming in after that music. We want to talk a little bit about the festival. The reason that Glenn is here is because he coordinates the music that happens before the show. During the green show, I guess you call it, on the green at the festival. But Dick, why don't you, for those who have never been to the Illinois Shakespeare Festival or maybe didn't even know there was such a thing, give us a bit of background on how long it's been around and how it got going.
Sure. Well, this is the 33rd year for the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, so we've been there for quite a while. Ewing Manor has a theater which we built, a new theater facility, 10 years ago. And it really is it's a spectacular experience. People come out, they picnic on the grounds. It's a beautiful old English manor. And then we have pre-show entertainment, which we're going to talk a little bit about today. And we have three main stage productions that go on. Two of them are Shakespeare productions each season, and one is a classical theater production. So this season we have our two Shakespeare pieces are The Tempest, which was Shakespeare's final piece that he wrote. It's an extremely popular piece by a lot of fans of Shakespeare. And The Merry Wives of Windsor, which features Falstaff. It's the only piece that Shakespeare wrote which was really about the common man. And Falstaff is kind of a buffoon, a fallen knight who is down on his luck, needs money, and hatches a plan to seduce a couple of women in his village. And the women really give it to him. They really trick him into a lot of things that are a lot of fun. So that production actually is opening next Friday, July 16th. That's the opening night for that. The other two shows, The Tempest and the non-Shakespeare piece, The Three Musketeers, are already running every night. So you can see that on alternate nights. The Three Musketeers is one that we actually commissioned to have written because we wanted a story that was really true to the Dumas stories, and we've come up, we think, is a really great play, and it's appropriate for families of all ages.
When you say you've come up with, somebody wrote it for the festival?
We did. We hired a Chicago playwright, Robert Kozlarik, who we worked with to get kind of what we wanted to see happen, which was something that was more true to the original stories. There's a lot of action, a lot of sword fighting, a lot of fun. It's a great show.
So the sword fighting is always tricky because you have to make it look real, but you have to make sure you don't actually get anybody hurt.
Safety first, but it looks very real. Yep.
I saw a demonstration here at the University of Illinois once. I forget what the occasion was, but they actually have somebody in the theater department who I think teaches sword fighting and things like that, you know, stage play.
Yes.
And I gather these guys have to have gone through that kind of coaching somewhere or another.
Well, they do. And we have, as part of our Shakespeare company, we have a fight captain who's in charge of all of our fighting. And the actors actually come early to do fight calls so that they can rehearse that to make sure that they're safe and remember what they're doing that night.
And are they using sharp swords?
They are.
Or blunted swords?
Well, they're not as sharp as you would have if you were really wanting to be in a sword fight, but they're sharp enough that you could be hurt. Yes.
You could poke your eye out as they
don't do this at home. Don't try this at home.
What was that movie, the Christmas Story, where you'll shoot your eye out?
That's right.
With the BB gun.
And then he did.
Did he?
Well, he shot his glasses, right?
And oh, that's what happened.
Ricocheted back, and he didn't shoot his eye out, but he broke his glasses.
My mom loved that movie. I watched that with her one time, and I thought, what do you think? This is wacko. But in any event, I'm looking at a page from the website, and there's a fourth show that's shown here.
There is. There is a free show that is on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., and this year it's As You Like It, which is another Shakespeare piece. It's a shorter version of the actual show, and it's geared towards families and younger kids who can come out. And you actually sit in the courtyard of the manor and have the show there.
But kids aren't in that show.
No, there are not kids in it. But it's all the professional company that's putting it on.
The company is all professionals, or I notice in the site it says here something about interns as well?
There are. You know, as part of Illinois State University, we have an educational program associated with the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. And so we have interns that are working with us this year. And then we also have professional actors who were brought in. The company is 120 total people. And then we have an additional 50 students who work in the grounds to help our patrons have a great experience.
And how long have you been affiliated with the festival?
I've been with the university for 10 years, and I've been with the festival for about a year.
And what's your role at the university?
I'm the managing director of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. That is my job.
So as managing director, you've been doing that for a year. What were you doing?
Before that time, I was facilitating educational outreach for the university.
And what does that mean?
That means that when you take the resources of the university and you try and help other groups like youth with educational experiences. And so the Illinois Shakespeare Festival has a pretty significant educational outreach program where we take touring companies into schools, junior highs, high schools, community centers, and we perform. We conduct workshops with those kids in different things like how to speak like Shakespeare, how to create a character, how to do stage combat, right? The fighting that you were talking about. It's a way for us to help improve the arts delivery in town.
So if kids want to get involved in something like that, what do they need to do?
Well, there are a lot of ways that they can get involved. The Shakespeare Festival runs camps every summer. So they can come in and do a Shakespeare camp, and we have a number of different types of camps that are available. They can get involved by coming to the free shows and seeing that, and there are opportunities to talk with the actors and learn more about careers in theater, and they can come to one of the tour shows.
Have the camps already happened, or they are
they're
still
ongoing
to happen?
Yeah, they're ongoing right now.
So if somebody wanted to get involved now, is it a little late for that?
We're getting close to the end for this year. Yes.
So they'd need to look for next year.
Yes.
For more information, you can go to the Illinois Shakespeare Festival website, which is thefestival.org, and you do need to put the in there. And there is indeed lots of information, including the whole history, long history of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. What did you say, 30-some years? 33 years. And talk about the green shows.
Well, we have pre-show entertainment. So people come and they eat. We have Kelly's Bakery and Cafe is available to bring meals out for our patrons. And there's also a significant array of things that they can buy, including beer and wine and other things. And the activities really start about 6. People picnic. And then we have pre-show entertainment. We're very fortunate to have Glenn Wilson and his group of musicians play jazz for us 15 nights out of the season. Fridays and Saturday nights, they're there playing, and it's really spectacular. Other nights, we have other live musicians who come out and play that Glenn also coordinates for us. And we have green show activities that are community groups that come and perform. So this year, we've invited people like the Community Players, and we've invited some of the high schools who don't always have an opportunity to get involved in this kind of thing. So they're coming out to actually do productions on our green show stage.
What are some of the other non-jazz music that's going on?
We don't want to talk about the non-jazz, do we?
Of course we do.
Okay. Well, we're doing an acoustic.
You picked these people too,
yes,
didn't
I
you?
Yes, I did. We're doing some acoustic nights. Singer-songwriters, Dennis Florine is one of them. Mark Boone, I don't know if you know Mark, he has a band called Hip Pocket, a very popular blues band in Bloomington, but he's doing a solo act right now in addition to that, so Mark will be doing one night. Dorothy Martirano and Armin Bodwin, both musicians from town here, very well known, violin and a bass cellist, will be doing one of those nights. They have a group called Ms. M and Her Jokers, and they do gypsy string music. And that's very interesting. I still have one more to book, so I'm not sure about the last one, which is August 4th yet. Who's going to be on that one? But
are there plays nightly, or are you dark for any part of the week?
We have a show almost every night. Mondays we're off, and there are just a couple of 2 or 3 nights that we don't play next week, as we get prepare for the opening night, Friday night of The Merry Wives of Windsor. Other than that, we're on every night.
And there's music of some kind each night?
There's some entertainment every night. Many of the nights it's music.
And some of them it's the other things that you mentioned.
It is. And the Madrigal singers play as well out there. It's just a long-standing tradition at the Shakespeare Festival, and they roam the grounds, and they also perform on the main stage.
Mm-hmm. And they serenade you while you have your dinner. It's really cool.
Well, I kind of remember that. You know, I do remember people sort of strolling around. Are there jugglers and other kinds of things at any time?
We don't have any jugglers this year, but maybe next year.
I'm just picturing, I don't know if they still have this up around Chicago every summer, King Richard's Fair.
Renaissance Fair.
Yeah, is that still good? It used to be called King Richard's Fair. I think it's got to be called something else, and I went to that a couple times, and I was thinking of that because that a similar time frame, I guess, as Shakespeare, not knowing my English history very well. Well, since we brought Glenn and George along, George, are you one of the performers out at the festival?
Yes, I played with Glenn's group a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I believe I think I'm going to be doing another one here in a couple of weeks.
I'm using all kinds of different groups, which I do, and some of them, like Darden Purcell and her husband Sean from town here, are going to do one night. We have other groups from Chicago that come in. Mostly I play with them, but some of them I may not be playing on. So it's a wide variety of musicians, and they're from all over the place, Indianapolis, Florida, New York, Chicago, whoever happens to be available. Last summer, Rory Stewart came in from New York the last 2 summers and played with me. He's in Korea this year, so he couldn't make it. But it's a very diverse group of musicians in it. So George will be doing some of them, definitely.
How common is it to have just sax and guitar, since that's what we've got today?
It's not that common, although I did make a record called Bittersweet.
Really?
With Rory Stewart. It's the only record of baritone sax guitar duets still yet in the history of jazz. Nobody else has done it, but there's some tenor guitar duets and alto. But no, Rory and I have had that group for years, and we used to tour a lot, and we'd play duo concerts, and then some places we'd have a bass and a drummer that we'd play with. But yeah, that's it's a challenge for me because I can't just play my solo and then sit down and wait for my turn to come around again. I'm playing constantly in that situation.
Yeah.
So it's some of the hardest playing I do as far as chop-wise because you never stop playing, and you have to keep thinking all the time of how you're going to accompany the other person.
And George, you must have to sort of fill in as bassist, drummer, rhythm guitarist, and melody guitarist.
Yeah,
variously.
Yeah. Sort of try to use elements of those various roles. Yeah, you know.
So when
you can't always do them all simultaneously, but
you can't
try to create that illusion. Yeah,
your feet. Don't you have cymbals between your knees? The only way this ever works is if the two players have the exact same feel of time feel, so that you can pretend the other people are playing and you're all in the same place. If I've tried it with people where we don't feel the time together, and it's a disaster. So,
but you've tried it out with George. So
yeah, we tried it earlier.
So we're not going to have a disaster here today. earlier. So when you played a little bit ago, George, it wasn't just with Glenn. It was with others in the band.
Oh yeah. I guess normally it would be quartet, with a bass player and drummer.
Uh-huh.
So we really are crossing our fingers today that you guys are in sync.
We've
right?
done this before.
Yeah, we've done it before. Right. I think we'll make it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so there's no net here while you walk this tightrope. So we're just trusting it'll be all fine.
No juggling.
What tune do you want to start with?
We're gonna play Out of Nowhere. Yeah. I forget who wrote this.
Yeah, me too.
Rain.
That almost sounds like a Who's on First kind of
joke. It's an old song that Charlie Parker adopted and became a bebop chestnut, but it's a standard. You came to me from out of nowhere. It's from the 30s.
Yeah.
All right. George Turner, Glenn Wilson, live on Live and Local.
Thank you.
The end. Glenn Wilson, Barry Sachs, and George Turner on guitar. And that there was a question that was the name of that tune. What was that called again?
What's that? You Out of Nowhere.
Yeah.
You came to me from out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. It followed my question. What was the name of that tune? You said Out of Nowhere, and I thought, is that a real answer to the question?
We didn't know who wrote it. Ray DePaul. It's like somebody Ray and somebody DePaul wrote the lyrics, but I don't know the guy's first name, Ray. Mm-hmm. Somebody, R-A-Y-E.
Somebody, yeah.
Well, see, if we paid royalties on the public radio for that.
We do pay. We do pay royalties.
Well, then Mr. Ray's going to get some money.
Yeah, through our, we have a license through NPR.
Yeah, BMI license.
Exactly.
I know, I teach music business at the campus here.
Do you?
Yes, if any of you are listening, it's open to all majors, not just music majors. We have marketing majors, we have all kinds of different kids in the class, so.
Now, how long has that gone on? Is that part of the jazz program?
Yeah, it is now. It's part of the requirements for the undergrad jazz majors. I teach Jazz Ped 1 the first semester and music business the second semester.
Jazz Ped is jazz pedagogy.
Right, teaching jazz band and jazz ensembles and things.
And you you actually came here to do a doctorate.
No,
right?
a master's. A master's, yeah.
And, you know, if you could see Glenn, you'd say, what are you just doing a master's for? Because he's got a lot of gray hair.
Oh, yeah.
He's been around.
Yeah. Well, I never wanted to teach until I hit about 50 years old. And my jazz mentor, Tony Leonardi from the Youngstown State University, passed away unexpectedly. And then my father died about 6 months later. So it really hit me that I wanted to try to pass some of this stuff on, you know, that a lot of the great masters of jazz are gone, of course, and now you're left with people like me that have actually played with some of those people. But when I'm gone, my generation's gone, it's going to be watching it on YouTube. So I wanted to go back to school and teach, and when I first started, when I had a bachelor's, you could have a bachelor's with good experience and get a college degree. So then
now
it became a master's, and now it's a DMA. I'm training students to get a DMA that can apply for jobs I'm not eligible for in the jazz world. It's kind of strange, but
even though by virtue of experience, you should be eligible to play with just about any.
Not anymore, buddy. You got to have that paper.
Yeah, you know, I was looking through your bio, and you list a lot of these players that you've worked with. But you also make the comment, you're quoting yourself here in the bio. You said, "I'm sorry, the young players today don't have this opportunity to apprentice," suggesting that you considered it an apprenticeship to be working with some of the folks that you did.
Absolutely.
And why is that not available now?
Well, because a lot of those bands are gone. The people are gone. Buddy Rich and Lionel Hampton and Woody Herman and Duke Ellington, Count Basie. There was a whole handful of bands. Maynard Ferguson, when I came out of college, undergrad, that you could play with. You know, and a lot of people I know went from one to the other. So did I. And they were all great experiences. And you played with people that had been playing forever you know, so you got to see them on a daily, nightly basis do their craft and do their business and take care of business. So it was an apprenticeship. Now those bands are gone, so everyone makes their own CD and puts it out, and they're immediately a leader, and they're out there trying to get gigs, and there's no, you know, there's no feeling that they've actually done any of this to know what's appropriate and what isn't.
So what would you do? You would show up at a club and somebody would invite you to sit in, and then you'd...
To get into those bands?
Yeah.
Sometimes that would happen, but usually it was just a recommendation. Somebody in the band that you've played with that knows you're playing and thinks that you would fit in this band. And I recommended quite a few people to bands, too, and it's kind of you're putting yourself on the spot, because if the leader doesn't like the person you recommended, it's not good for you, just like any other job.
They're not going to ask you again.
Yeah, and with Buddy, there was no audition. You just got fired if he didn't like you. So people were always leaving and going, you know, drop of a hat, so to speak, but...
Well, plus it was—I imagine it's always been like what you were talking about earlier, with just a sax and guitar. If you don't click, it's not going to work. So if you don't click with the band, maybe they thought you would and you didn't. And
right, and a lot of it's personality too. To live on a bus with a bunch of people and travel 48 weeks a year on a bus is—you have to like the people you're living with for the most part.
So those bands and leaders that you mentioned are gone, but aren't there? New bands and leaders that people could do that with now, or is it just not happening that way?
Not big bands. See, that was the thing. At the big bands, you had 15 musicians employed there or more, 16, 17. That was a whole group of people that could all, you know, form a cohesive group and make music together. Those bands are all gone now. There's a lot of smaller jazz groups touring around, but again, most of them are leaders that just decided they wanted to have a group and made a record. And you know, in the old days, you used to have somebody believe in you to put a record out, right? You couldn't just put out your own vinyl LP. You know, it was like somebody had to sign you to a label and say, this person's worthy to be heard. Now we have what I call audible spam. You know, every musician, you know, has 16 CDs out that they've put out through.
So now you just have to believe in yourself.
Well, you always have to do that.
But, I mean, it sounds like you're more reliant on that.
Well, you're more reliant on identifying with an audience and working, playing music for yourself, but also there's an audience out there, and there's a certain level of, you know, that you people have to – people aren't exposed to jazz today like they used to be. They don't hear it on the radio much. They don't see it on TV at all. So, you know, what is jazz to them? You walk into a Coconuts or whatever. See what they have in the jazz section. It'll be Kenny G and the greatest hits of John Coltrane and a bunch of strange records that, you know. So we have to educate too. That's part of our job as musicians.
So what do you tell students, you know, how to get going at this point?
I tell my students that only do this if you love it and you really feel like it's what you need to do. You know, if there's something else you love to do, do that and just play music on the side. You know, if you're going to try to be a professional musician, you're going to have to put up with a lot of stuff. So only do it if you really love it and it's what you have to do. And those are the people that are going to succeed anyway.
But then on the music business side of things, since you're teaching that,
how
do you tell them to get started?
That's a whole nother scheme. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
once you made the decision, I want to do that.
I get stuff all the time from people who are writing new books and new seminars in music business. The latest one I just got is a guy, Chris Cox from England, who says that in addition to giving away your music, which most of us have already decided is the way to go instead of trying to sell it, He recommends getting your music pirated, and he's got a whole thing about how to get your music into all the pirated sites so that people will, you know, trade it a lot and get it out there. You know, now teaching a music business class, I can't really be dealing with pirated illegal websites too much, but that's the latest scheme, is not only to give it away but to virally market the fact that you're giving it away. So,
George, what about you? I don't have a printed bio here for you, but how did you come up into what you're doing, and did you have an apprenticeship kind of thing? I mean, you're not anywhere near Glenn's age. No offense, Glenn, but
well, not too far.
But you're older than the average student here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I came from Virginia. I just decided I wanted to play, and I just started teaching guitar and just getting gigs with, you know, I mean, I didn't have any apprenticeships with, you know, the, you know, earlier legends of jazz, you know, like Glenn did. But you know, I played with you know the best musicians I could around the area that I was in, and that's how I learned how to play. And I just decided to come back to school later in life, just so that I could teach.
So I was going to ask if that's what you're hoping to do as well. Yeah. So you're in the master's program or the doctoral program?
No, I actually already got my master's. I'm in the doctoral program now.
All right, so you're gonna jump over Glenn here.
Yep.
You're gonna
be. Well, I don't know. I think experience still accounts for something.
So George is George. Are you? Would you consider George then a mentor? Are you sort of apprenticing? You're a George. Sorry, Glenn. Are you kind of apprenticing with Glenn in this situation? Would you say?
Yeah, I'd say so. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm putting out records still, so I use I just did a recording this week with some of our former students, and hopefully that's going to be coming out soon with Jim Pugh and I, trombone instructor here at the school, jazz instructor. So,
and you have a duo with him you call Trombarry.
Yeah, it's not a duo, it's a quintet. We're the two lead horns. Yeah.
Have we had you guys play together in here? I mean, he's been in here a couple times.
I think we did once, yeah. Because Trombarry was playing an important gig somewhere, I forget. But
yeah, but we'll have to do it again at some point.
Yeah, yeah. We recorded that too.
We're talking to Glenn Wilson, Barry sax player, and George Turner, guitarist. And we've got Dick Foles with us from the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. Glenn organizes the music that happens, the live music that happens on the green before the shows at Ewing Manor, and George among the performers there.
And we wanted to emphasize, too, that, of course, we're an hour away from there, but you don't have to be going to the show necessarily to come and listen to the music or participate. You know, it's free, open to the public. People bring their picnics and their wine and listen to the music or watch a pre-show and then go do something else if they don't have tickets. So,
What are the ticket prices like, Dick, for the festival?
You can get a ticket for the festival as low as $18. I think the upper end is about $34. It depends on where you're sitting and what night you're sitting.
There's no bad seat in the house, really.
There's not a bad seat.
Well, I was going to say, it's not a large theater.
Uh-uh. 438 seats, so it's pretty intimate.
Yeah, that's a great space
theater,
to sit.
Yeah.
So, again, if you want to get tickets, you can go to their website. It's thefestival.org and see all the pricing there. And you can buy them through the website, right?
Yes, you can.
Easily enough. You're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. More music in just a moment. Support for our show today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Were you just getting hungry as I read that?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I heard
I'm
that.
I'm going to go there right now.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be a good place.
I've been there.
Have you?
Yes.
I'm not.
I've been there many times.
Much of a cook, but you know, I know people who go in there. And so George, rather Glenn. I'm sorry, I keep mixing your name. But Glenn is endorsing World Harvest.
Yes, I am.
As a host, I cannot endorse World Harvest.
Yep, go there.
I just read the underwriting announcements because they help support the show.
They're great.
What do we want to hear next, or what do you want to play next?
I don't know. We didn't talk about any more than one.
We'll discuss about it. Discuss
you
it
want
right
another
now.
One?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll come up with something. This is the Sunny Moon. Sunny Moon for Two. Oh, with E flat. Thank you.
Man, I envy your brains, both of you guys, just to be to have that the kind of intellectual freedom that you have to have, I would think, to play jazz. You know.
Well, some of it's brains, yeah. Some of it's, you know, emotion too.
Yeah, I realize that, and you have to.
That's the hard part to teach. We teach our students. Release. We can teach them what licks to play over what chords that work, but you can't teach somebody to actually play music.
So. I think maybe what I meant by intellectual freedom, and you can let go of your brain, as I don't think I can do.
Oh yeah.
So that it just comes straight from the heart into the fingers.
Yes.
You know.
Good description.
Or in your case, from through the wind.
Well, yeah, that's another element of
into
it.
Into the reed and all that stuff, and George. Anyway, that sounded great. What was the name of that tune?
Thank you, "Sunny Moon for Two" by Sonny Rollins.
"Sunny Moon for Two." I have a funny. No, it wasn't a Sonny Rollins story. It was a Dexter Gordon story. No, it was a Sonny Rollins story. I'm not going to tell it, though.
It
puts me in a bad light.
Well, we'll just laugh. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did hear him live one time at Northwestern University, and it was a great show.
He played at Krannert a couple years ago.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
Well, I missed it somehow or another. But Glenn Wilson, baritone saxophone. By the way, why baritone sax? I mean, there's not too many people that focus on that as a solo instrument.
Well, that's true. It's actually an interesting story to me and a few other people, might be to your listeners. But when I was a senior in high school, my college jazz ensemble at the university was directed by that same jazz mentor that I had at college. He was at my high school. And he needed a baritone sax player for the first band. So he said if I played the baritone, I could join the first band. And otherwise, I would have to wait till the following year, or maybe not even then. So I said, great. So I played the baritone, and it became my voice. I really loved it and enjoyed it, and I've been playing it ever since. But I told that story once, and my high school band director called me up, and he goes, "You always wanted to play the baritone." He goes, "I wouldn't let you because I needed you on alto." And he said, "You played it one year in marching band even." He said, "I wouldn't let you play the baritone." So I guess I always wanted to play the baritone. But that was the impetus to actually buy a baritone and learn to play it. So it's really interesting to try to teach the baritone sax. We have a lot of majors now that are coming in that play the baritone, which is cool. And so we get to really work on things that are baritonistic, which are not alto and tenoristic necessarily.
We had a nice Barry Sax player who was in from the Illinois Summer Youth Music Festival
last week.
We had a sax quartet, and one of them was
cool.
on Barry. Yeah. Nice, big, fat, round sound and a real solid.
Well, classical saxophone is a whole other animal.
You know,
there's other skills involved in doing that we don't teach our jazz students. They're pretty separate here because, of course, we have Deborah Rickmeyer, who's a fantastic and well-known classical saxophone teacher. So she's got her studio, and then we have the jazz studio with Chip McNeil and Ron Bridgewater and I who teach the saxophones.
Right.
So it's a whole different...
But I understand there's some crossover between them. She told me that when she was here that I hadn't even realized. I've known her for years, and I didn't know that she'd spend so much of her time playing jazz.
She did, yeah. She made some records with like a smooth jazz sort of group, yeah. It was interesting, yeah.
Well, it's great to have you. George
Thank you.
Turner on guitar, Glenn Wilson on Barry Sax. I love the sound of the Barry Sax.
Oh,
I'm glad you decided to do it. And you can hear music. The Green Show at Ewing Manor, Illinois Shakespeare Festival, starts at 6 o'clock generally? Roughly.
Yeah, activities start at 6, and they start playing about 6:30.
On the weekend, Friday and Saturday, 6:30 to 7:30. Yeah.
Is the jazz and other kinds of music and other kinds of entertainment.
The other kinds of music that are on other nights will start at 6.
At 6 o'clock.
Yeah, they're not weekend music nights.
And the plays this summer, The Three Musketeers, and then Shakespeare's The Tempest and The Merry Wives of Windsor. The young audience performance still has dates left?
It does, yep. It goes right out to the end, till August 8th.
As You Like It. For more information, thefestival.org. Dick Foles is the managing director and my third guest on the show today. It's live and local on FM 90.9. Yesterday we had a really full show. And the result of that was that I didn't get to really share much music with one of the fellows who's playing tonight at the Champaign Music Festival, Dudley Owens, a sax player out of Chicago. Do you know him, Glenn?
No, I don't.
He's a young-ish looking, anyway, alto sax player, and he's bringing his organ trio to the festival tonight at Cafe Luna at 8 o'clock, but I got to play like 3 minutes of his music in the midst of a 15-minute interview because we were so cramped, so I thought we would hear a complete version of one of the tunes that we heard just a fragment of yesterday. But let me run down just some of the rest of what's at the Champaign Festival Music Festival tonight. Starts at 6 o'clock. David Howie's at Bentley's Pub at 9 o'clock. Cara Morizzi and Jason Bentley at Baltini Lounge at 6:30. Ashley Riley is at Aroma Cafe at 6, followed by Eva Hunter at 8 o'clock. Los Guapos, playing Afro-Cuban jazz, are at Cowboy Monkey at 8 o'clock tonight. Caleb Cook and the Glasshouse Carpenters at the High Dive at 7:30. Ryan Groff is at Indigo Artist Co-op at 7 o'clock tonight. And Paige Lushow, hoping I'm saying her name right, at Cakes on Walnut at 7 o'clock. And then the Champaign Music Festival continues tomorrow as well from 12 to 11. There's lots of other stuff going on in your area, but that's what I've got time to go through right now.
Always put in a plug for the Iron Post, which is our big jazz hangout in town.
Oh, sure.
And I just played there Monday night. George has some things coming up there, and Joel Spencer's there next week, two nights, with his quartet from Chicago. So.
And Iron Post, tonight is Darden Purcell.
Okay.
It's going to be there at 5, and then, I don't know, who are the Band Geeks? Is that a jazz group?
I don't know them.
Whoever they are, they're at the Iron Post tonight.
Oh, cool.
At 9 o'clock. Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project is going to be at Remy's Jazz and Cocktails in Springfield at 8:30 tonight. So we'll have to leave it at that because I want to get in all of Dudley Owens' tune. It's a long one. It's called Roots. It's his own composition, and he had explained yesterday. It kind of goes back to some of his origins as a jazz player. The Dudley Owens Jazz Band, I think it's a sextet for this performance. It's called Roots here on Live and Local.